We focus many times on what it is to be a Christian, to become a member of Christ's church. Since Christ is the head of his church, he has full and unique authority to determine who is and is not a member of his church. And yet, in nearly 20 years of preaching and over 35 years of being a Christian, I cannot recall a single lesson on what it means to be a member of a local congregation. Who decides this? What terms and conditions are necessary? And what process is used? I'm not saying here, well, what does Chad expect of you as a member here? Because that's not my decision. And I did consult with the elders on this lesson as to what they understand membership to be all about. On the other hand, most of what can be said about church membership is intuitive. And what I mean by that is that you can simply figure it out by the context and necessary implications. I'm going to bring that out in this lesson. Now, you know that my lessons often downplay congregational membership in comparison to fellowship with God. In other words, you cannot confuse the two things or interchange them. The one doesn't mean the other. Just because you're a member of even a sound congregation doesn't mean necessarily that you are in good standing with God himself. But that doesn't mean that congregational membership is unimportant or irrelevant or unnecessary. It just means that it's different than one's spiritual fellowship with God. So let's compare the two just quickly, not the two fellowships and memberships, but just the two ideas behind membership itself. In one sense, it is a rather informal process. There is no paperwork. There is no signature collection. There is no collateral put down. You don't put up your house or something like that for this membership. It's a completely voluntary situation. No one can force you to come on board or stay. But the congregation can revoke your membership, and I'll talk about that in a later lesson. In another sense, however, even though it's a rather informal process, it's still extremely important. If everyone here who claims to be a member of this congregation doesn't act like a member or doesn't fulfill his or her obligation as a member, then we don't have a congregation. The Church of Christ in Kent is simply a name or an idea. It's not a reality. So in another sense, it is not a doctrinal matter, what we're discussing here. I can't cite specific verses where God says, thou shalt be a member of a given congregation. I cannot mandate what we say here for this group for all groups. In another sense, however, it is doctrinal, inasmuch as it concerns your attitude and your personal relationship with Christ. You don't have to be a member of this congregation in order to be a Christian. But if you are a Christian, and as such, you are a member of this congregation, well, then that demands that you uphold your commitment and the responsibility that you pledged to this congregation when you became a member here. Furthermore, there are a number of godly principles that bear upon the subject of membership: honesty, commitment, diligence, and ethics, love, concern for one another. These things are not separated from your loyalty to Christ. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and we need to back up and understand the concept, and then we'll look at the practical applications. All right, so to define membership in general, suppose you're the manager of a softball team and you're recruiting players, really members of your team. There's some general expectations for that. First of all, you have to show up for the games, show up for the practices. You need to wear the uniform. You need to play according to the rules. You need to support the team. You need to listen to the management, the coach in particular, of course. You need to pay whatever fees are required of membership. And you need to act in a civil manner. Doesn't that make sense? Now, suppose someone says, I want to be on your team, and therefore he's going to do all that is expected. The question might be, well, if he does all that's expected there, then is he a member of that team? Well, the answer would be yes. He's cooperating with the expectations. He's a productive member of that team. Now suppose someone says, well, I want to be on your team. I just don't want to do anything. I don't want to show up. I don't want to wear the uniform. I don't want to play the game. I don't want to listen to the coach. I don't want to, you know, do all these things that are expected there. The question might be, is he really a member of the team? Even though he signed a form there that said that he should have been a member. Well, the answer is no, he's not. He failed to fulfill the obligation of what is required or what is expected. Signing up for the team, so to speak, is a commitment to future action. It is not a replacement for such action or a cause for avoiding that action. One who signs up but does not honor or will not honor the expectation of his membership to the team is no longer recognized as a member of that team. And this is very similar to baptism itself. When you are baptized into Christ, you are, in essence, signing on the dotted line. You're saying that you are going to fulfill future obligations to Christ because of the commitment that you made up front. Doesn't that make sense? And isn't that what you understood when you became a Christian in your baptism? I hope that it does, and I hope that's what you did. But this is all very similar to a congregation. If you wish to be a member here, understand that there are expectations, terms, and conditions of membership. And while these expectations may be very general or even unwritten, they are expectations nonetheless, and you agree to honor them. Your verbal commitment or your initial meeting with the elders is not a replacement for future action. Quite the opposite. It is a commitment to future action for the benefit of this group as well as the group's future benefits to you. Now, nobody's twisting your arm to join, but if you do, then that's called a commitment or a promise or a vow. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 37, Jesus tells us that our answer ought to be yes, yes, or no, no, and anything beyond these is evil. In other words, anything less than that or beyond that is something that is a false commitment or an empty promise. In other words, your commitment to the group is voluntary. But once that commitment is made, it's no longer voluntary. Now it's required. And it's not because I said so. And it's not because the congregation said so, really. It's because you said so. And it's because God said so. And it's because of the commitment or the promise that you made to God, and therefore it bears upon your integrity and the virtue that you express in that honesty of that commitment. Saying yes to membership entitles you to benefits and blessings associated with that membership. In other words, whatever the congregation has to offer its members, well, you're a legitimate receiver of those benefits, and that's a good thing, and you should look forward to that. At the same time, you can't say yes, hoping to reap the benefits, but then no to the responsibilities of membership. Imagine, for example, a member of a team who signed up as a team member anyway, but did not participate. He didn't play the game. He didn't wear the uniform. He didn't listen to the coach, or he limited his participation in some customized manner. But then he shows up at the awards banquet, the sports banquet there at the end of the season, hoping to be recognized for what? Team participation? That just doesn't make sense, does it? And likewise, your so-called membership here, if indeed you do nothing to support it, really isn't going to help you at the awards banquet, so to speak. And when you stand before God and you say, but I was a member of a sound congregation, God might say to you, well, you did make that commitment. That's true. But you really didn't follow through with it. And so whatever commitment you made turned out to be a false promise. You don't want to be in that situation. Someone says, well, then I'll just leave. But that's not what this is all about. It's your choice if that's what you want to do, but this lesson is not an attempt to chase you away, but rather to admonish you. And that word admonish really means to remind you of that which you committed to. I didn't commit to this for you. You committed to it. You didn't commit me to this congregation. I committed to it. Someone might say, well, my relationship with this group doesn't affect my standing with Christ. But that's just not true. What you do here, and I don't mean here in this building only, but here in this group, is a reflection of your relationship with Christ, whether positively or negatively. Christ takes no pleasure in people who make vows yet refuse to keep them. That is, the membership that you promised to this congregation as a vow. That is a promise made in His sight. After all, this is a church of Christ. So whatever we do in His name is a reflection on what we say that we believe in Christ. On the other hand, those who do well in this work do contribute to their own salvation. We're not saying they're earning their salvation. We can't teach that, and we dare not teach that. But it does mean that God remembers your good work, and that's a good thing. And I'm glad that He does, and I hope that you are too. So, one way to measure the effect of membership on a congregation is to ask this general question. What if everyone, including myself, put in the same effort toward success and growth of this congregation as you do? Someone says, well, if they all did that, it would be a better congregation. And you may well be right. If you're working hard, if you're studying hard, if you're participating well and are a strong giver in whatever respect is necessary, well, then the whole congregation, if they follow your lead, follow your example, that's going to improve the group. On the other hand, it could be disastrous if indeed your participation here is weak or extremely limited or is lacking altogether. And if everyone followed suit, well, then we soon don't have a congregation. But let's put it in more specific terms. What if everyone showed up as often and at the same time as you show up? What effect would that have on the group? What if you're, say, chronically 20 minutes late? And everyone's 20 minutes late, including myself. I mean, what kind of group do we have? What does that say about our expectations? Someone says, we don't have any written expectations. That's not true. We have written expectations in the times that are published, not only in our bulletin, but also on the front board on the front of the building there and anywhere else. We have written expectations of when we start. And we're expected to be here as members to support that and to honor that. But suppose you're here only part-time or negligent in your coming at all. Or, positively, suppose that you're here all the time and that becomes a model behavior for the rest of us to follow. What if everyone encouraged as much or as often as you encourage? How many people did you encourage this last week or even this last month? Is that your habit to encourage people? Is that what you do? Or are you just here doing your thing and then you go home and you forget about this congregation until the next time you show up? How many times have you reached out to help others? And should we follow your pattern? Should we all do what you do? How many times did you contribute to this congregation? And should we follow the same percentage that you contributed to this congregation? Let's just talk about money, for example. If you're making a pretty decent sum as far as your income is concerned, and you're throwing 20 bucks in the plate every week or every other week, and you're calling that a sacrifice, you don't understand the concept of sacrifice. And if everybody did that, if everyone gave proportionately that way, well, it's just a matter of time, and a very short time, before we need to fold up shop here. We just can't operate like that. On the other hand, if you're a generous giver, and you're giving liberally and cheerfully as you're supposed to, and we're all following suit, we could bring the level of this contribution up even higher than what it is. What if everyone did the same level of study as you do? Well, we might all be excellent Bible students. Or we might not have a clue of what we're doing, depending on your lead. What if everyone prayed as often and as deeply as you do? What if everyone shared the gospel as you share the gospel, as often or as genuinely as you share it? What if everyone loved in the same manner as you love, with that same genuineness or demonstration or that same intensity, or perhaps with you know, that laissez-faire, indifferent attitude, or maybe just not worrying about it at all? What kind of people would we be? The point here is, someone says, it doesn't matter what I do, as long as everyone else does what they're supposed to do. And that's really what a hypocrite does, is he has a standard that is for himself and a different standard for everyone else. And he's generally pretty lenient toward himself and pretty critical of everyone else. We don't want to be a church of hypocrites. We can't afford to do that. We need to be genuine in what we're doing. And membership is about being genuine. In past lessons, I have covered the mission or the purpose of a congregation. In fact, I've taken whole series to talk about this. And I'm just going to have to, you know, jump right to the point here for the sake of time. Otherwise, we'll be here all day. It really is discipleship. Teaching people how to be disciples. Making disciples in the manner or the method which we are instructed in the New Testament. Baptizing them and in the name of Jesus and for the forgiveness of their sins. And then keeping those people as disciples through encouragement and admonishment and edification and teaching and our assembling together. All those things are contributing toward discipleship. Now, if we don't know what our purpose of existence is, then likely we will not fulfill that purpose or contribute toward it. And I'm not sure if discipleship is why you are a member here, but it ought to be that. The New Testament churches were not established for any other reason than discipleship. We're not here just to be your home church, although it may be true that we are your home church, then that's fine, but that's not why we exist. That's not why we're here. We're not here to provide you with a place to meet friends or to socialize, although you might meet friends here, and I hope that we do socialize. But that's not why we exist. That's not why we're here. We are here for discipleship. I want to turn your attention to 1 Corinthians chapter 14, where Paul has some things to say, and I recognize that he's talking in the context of spiritual or miraculous gifts, and that those gifts have since ceased as a functional part of the church's activity. It's not that the Holy Spirit has disappeared from us. It's simply that he's manifesting his work in other ways. But nonetheless, there was some instruction necessary. I just want you to think about what Paul says here. In verse 3 through 5, he says, "But he who prophesies speaks edification and exhortation and comfort to men. He who speaks in a tongue edifies himself, but he who prophesies edifies the church. I wish you all spoke with tongues, but even more that you prophesied. For he who prophesies is greater than he who speaks with tongues, unless he interprets unless indeed he interprets, that the church may receive edification." Drop down to verse 12. "Even so, since you are zealous for spiritual gifts, let it be for the edification of the church that you seek to excel." Drop down to verse 26, the latter part of that verse. "Let all things be done for edification." And then down in verse 40, "Let all things be done in decency and in order." One thing that ought to come out here is that we are to be a group that edifies one another. Edification is something that we do on a regular basis. We come together to edify. That is, literally, to build one another up. And we also come together in propriety. That's what decency and order refers to. We do things properly, as they're supposed to be done, not by our standard, but by God's standard. So these are the hallmarks of the church. And this is the purpose of, or supports the purpose of, discipleship. Everything that we do in our edifying and our decency and order is promoting the cause of and the idea of discipleship. It supports teaching people to become disciples, making disciples, and keeping them disciples. This is why we ought to exist. The New Testament pattern shows that elders are to be appointed as overseers or shepherds of all established congregations. We read that in Acts chapter 14, for example, verse 23, where it says in a passive sense there, in other words, kind of, by the way, Paul and Barnabas there appointed elders in every church of the churches that they established on their first missionary journey. And in Titus chapter 1, verse 5, Paul reminds Titus there to appoint elders in every church just as I directed you. Well, you can't shepherd an unknown or unspecified number of people. The concept of congregational organization involves knowing who belongs and, by necessity, who doesn't belong. If you belong to this congregation, the elders need to know that. They can't shepherd you properly or really at all if they don't know that you're part of the flock. And not only this, but they have every right to interview you or ask questions of you or even decide if your membership here is in the best interest of the group. Let's face it, if you're a troublemaker in the brotherhood, so to speak, right, you're just going from church to church and causing all kinds of mischief and trouble and division and dissension, or you're bouncing around from one congregation to the next, maybe avoiding your responsibilities or just getting people upset with you and then running away from that rather than dealing with it. Or if you've been disfellowshipped from another group and then you come here and you want to be a part of our group, well, we need to investigate that. Our elders need to investigate that. If you're a liability rather than an asset, we don't need you here as a member, because that brings down the work that we're doing here. It corrupts the integrity of this group to bring you on board. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 7, you find there that the ministry of the Spirit, given then in the form of miraculous gifts, was all for the benefit of the group, for the common good, it says there. And likewise, the elders ought to seek the common good of the congregation. And we also, as members of this congregation, ought to support the elders in seeking the common good of this congregation. A congregation is not a free-for-all where everyone comes and goes as they please. It's not a place to bring all your baggage, emotional, religious, or otherwise, so that you can unpack it here and expect everyone else to, you know, be sensitive to all your sensitivities and to cater to you and so on. That's not why we're here. So the elders need to seek the common good, which means the whole good of the whole group. And likewise, we as members are to support that as well. The elders have a solemn and God-given responsibility toward those who belong here and not toward those who do not belong. They have the right to oversee the spiritual welfare of this group, as well as to evaluate the fitness of those who wish to join this group. And if you are a member of this group, then by necessity, you have voluntarily submitted to the oversight of the elders of this congregation, who at one time were selected by this congregation for that very purpose. The elders ought not to have to beg you to listen to them or to answer to them. And I'm saying this in reference to a recent scenario where our elders have gotten up in front of the group several times now and said, we'd like to meet with you just to see where you're at spiritually. How can we help you? How can you help us? And just simply, you know, reconnect with the members of this group. And I don't know who has been resisting or who has not. But I know that not everyone has done this. In fact, I'm told simply that about half of the group has participated in this and the other half has not, for reasons unknown to me. But what I'm trying to tell you, though, is that you have no right to be elusive. You have no right to stiff arm those who are appointed to oversee your spiritual well-being. You have no right as a member here to reject the oversight of those who are put in charge of the members here. That is not what you have the right to do. Upon becoming a member here, you accepted the oversight of these men. For you to turn around now and say, I don't want your oversight, or I don't care about your oversight, Or, I so disagree with your oversight that I'm going to rebel against you if that's what you're doing. Well, you have no right to do that. Now you're saying yes and no. You're saying yes to membership and no to your responsibility. Remember what we talked about. That's a false promise. That's something you have to answer to God for. Someone says, well, I don't like those terms of membership. Well, what did you think membership actually meant? I mean, where did you get that from, as we say? Who told you that? I can go to the Bible and at least pull up principles of membership and principles of our submission to the elders. Where are you getting your information from? Over in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17, for example, it says, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. And that's talking about not the leaders of some other church, but the leaders of the church that you belong to, your congregation. And it's not talking about the preacher here. It's talking about the shepherds, the pastors, the overseers, the elders who have that God-given responsibility to see to the spiritual well-being of this group. That's who that's talking about. Where did you get your information if you're resisting that? And how can you resist that successfully and call yourself a member in good standing? Now, I'm being pretty bold on this because apparently, through observation, if nothing else, we're not all on the same page. We cannot fulfill our objective as a congregation if we are divided over what it means to be a member of this congregation. And while you have your individual ministry, and I hope that you do, and I hope that you are pursuing that, you, by joining this group, are pledged to this collective ministry. Now, that's a good thing for you to have both ministries, yours, your private one, if you will, and then this collective one. But when you are here, when you have committed to this group, then you understand that there are certain things required of you. We're told in Ephesians 5:21, be subject to one another in the fear or the reverence of Christ. And that means that we are to cooperate with one another. We have a common goal. We have a common objective. We know what our mission is, so to speak. It is discipleship, and we are to work toward that. There are things that have to be done, and we are to do that in subjection to one another in the fear or the reverence of Christ, because we all individually and collectively answer to Christ. So this governs our attitude toward one another, and it's conditioned by, hopefully, our respect, our reverent respect for Christ. Our attitude or our participation or our cooperation with one another is not a separate issue from our allegiance to Christ. Now, we've been talking in recent lessons about being approved by God, and David just gave an excellent lesson on why we should excel still more. There's always room for improvement wherever we are, no matter what level you're at right now. Every one of us can take a step upward. And I'm not trying to say through this lesson that things are pretty bad right now. Actually, in my opinion, they're pretty good, especially in comparison to other groups. But that by itself doesn't mean anything by itself. Because if other groups are doing very horribly and we're doing just a little bit better than horrible, that's not a real flattering thing for us. All we're saying here is that there is room for growth. There is room for opportunity. And just because this group is very doing well, I should say, in some respects, that's great, but we can excel still more. Just because we contribute pretty strongly, that's great. We like that, but we could all excel still more. And what I mean by that is, you know, most groups operate on the 80-20 principle. 80% of our revenue, if you will, is contributed by only 20% of the group. And if we could get that smaller number up, then things can happen so much more and so much better than they are now. Just because we receive the word well doesn't mean everyone's internalizing it and putting it into practice. We have room for growth. And it all begins with our attitude toward the group in the first place, which brings me down to, what is your attitude toward this group and toward your membership in particular? What is your contribution to the edification and the strengthening of this group? And what is your attitude toward the leaders, the elders of this group? Remember that your verbal commitment to the group is not a replacement for future action. It is in anticipation of that action. We can't grow as a group if only some of us are on board and the rest are digging in their heels or have lost sight of their purpose. We just can't grow as a group, and we need to grow as a group. How do you conduct yourself as a member of this congregation? Because that most certainly does reflect your overall attitude toward Christ's leadership of His church. It is His leadership, after all, that ideally governs and conditions our response to the work of the church and our relationship to one another. Someone says, well, it's nobody's business what I do. That's just not true. If you're a member here, it is our business, to some extent anyway, of what you do. So don't be deceived into thinking that way. I'd like to leave you with 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16 through 18. And Paul is talking to the church at Corinth about the church at Corinth. In other words, about the whole church. And that's what the you is here in this verse when he says in verse 16, do you, the church, not know that you, the congregation there, you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you. If anyone defiles the temple of God, God will destroy him, for the temple of God is holy, which temple you are. Let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise in this age, let him become a fool that he may become wise, which is another way of saying, if you think you're so smart that you're ahead of the game and above it all and not held accountable, then that's really acting very foolish, and you need to understand that. You need to recognize your situation. But he also says that, in essence, the church at Corinth, as any sound congregation, is a sacred group of people that has no reference to the building or to the furniture or to the parking lot or to the teaching programs. It has reference to the people. This is a sacred assembly, or a sacred group of people, not because we said so, but because God says so. And we are a temple of the Holy Spirit if indeed we are representing and recognizing Christ appropriately and respectfully as we should, which, as you know now, is demonstrated through our conduct toward one another. That is God's view. What is your view? How do you see yourself here? If there's anyone here that is subject to our invitation, we have much more to say on this subject, but we're going to have to stop it for now. But if you're subject to our invitation, not our invitation just to join this congregation, but first of all, your need to join, if you will, or to become a member of Christ's spiritual body, and you need to make that decision today, and you need to be baptized into Christ, we are here to help you. Or if you have any other spiritual need that we can help you with, this would be the time in the service for you to respond. Come forward if you need to as we stand and sing the song.